fully present. I'll call the meeting of legislative committee to order. We'll start off with citizen comments. Any citizens?
I'm not one.
Chairperson comments, just one. Next month, the person that'll be coming in to speak to us will start with the legislators. And we're starting off with Senator Roach. And then we'll go from there at, with legislators over the next few months. Is there any supervisor comments? Any youth in government comments? Emily, any communications at all? Okay. Approval of the July 19th minutes. Can I get a motion, please?
So moved. Second.
Okay, moving first and seconded. Any comments? All in favor of the minutes, state by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And our speaker this evening is Teddy Winnett, because there's a lot of things going on with UW Extension. And she can update us on the latest, in fact, from even this afternoon.
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. We'll do roll call real quick.
Okay. Boyd Frederick.
Here.
David Holman.
Present.
Eddie Berg.
Here.
Aaron Decker is excused. John Franco.
Here.
John Cole.
Here.
Michael Skolinski.
He's here.
And then youth governance, Alexandra Harrow.
Here.
And Emma Hope. Oh, Homer Kavner is.
She'll be here next to the. And then two esteemed guests.
Somebody come in behind me?
Oh, sorry.
No worries. Are we good? Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the legislative committee. I'm here to give you an update on a process that has started as a result of Governor Walker's budget to the UW system. And I'm going to tell you that there's not a whole lot of new news to share. So I just looked around the room and some of you are going to be familiar with some of the information I'm sharing, and some of you perhaps will be. But I appreciate a chance to bring you all to speak. So I'm going to start with a handout that is going to describe to you a bit about who we are, so that you have a chance to see how the structure is set up and why and how we are doing an extra copy for the next one. How we're structured in state government. So the first page shows you that the UW system, as you know, is operated by a board of regents. And the university systems in order are the 11 comprehensive universities of the UDC. Oh. 11 four-year campuses and two doctorials. Those are the 13 UW campuses. I like to refer to them as the cousins on the family tree. And so our 11 comprehensives would be UW Stevens Point, Stout, Parkside, Flatville, River Falls, Eau Claire, Stevens Point, Oshkosh, Cross, and yada, 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 right? I don't think I got them all. The two doctorals are UW Madison and UW Milwaukee. Okay, those are those boxes on the family tree. The next box is where you're going to find our UW colleges. And there are 13 of those as well. The two closest to Kenosha County would be UW Rock and UW Waukesha. But the box that affects us is UW Extension, the box on the far right. Flip it up and go to the next page. This is how that particular box would then break down. So across the top, you're going to see the conference centers and Wisconsin Communities Council. But more importantly are those four boxes in the middle. Those are what is referred to as the divisions of UW Extension. I'm going to start on the right and go backwards. So business and entrepreneurship is actually on almost all of the campuses. That's where the SBDC offices are located, and that's the one that most people are most familiar with. Continuing ed, outreach and e-learning is all of the continuing ed programs on each of the four campuses. And we do have a unit here at UW Parkside in Kenosha and Racine counties. So they operate all the outreach programs through UW system. The second box from the left is broadcast and meeting innovations. And for those of you who've ever listened to Wisconsin Public Radio, WHAD, that's where that comes from. It is not Milwaukee Public Television. They have a separate license separately, but it's WHAD. So it's the Wisconsin Public Television and Radio Madison. The box on the far left is where we are. So we're at Cooperative Extension. So we're UW Extension, Cooperative Extension. We're the division that's located in each county extension office across the state of Wisconsin in two tribal nations. Our programs are listed in the box. For those of you who are familiar with Extension, you know we have educators and youth have educators in all of these areas. Agriculture and Natural Resources, Community Natural Resources and Economic Development, Youth 4-H Youth Development, Family Living Programs, and then two statewide programs you're going to see at the bottom is the Wisconsin Geological and Natural History Survey and Leadership Wisconsin. They operate statewide. The other four are primarily programs operated out of counties. So that's who we are. That's how we got, how we're connected to the UW system. The next page, the last page, is our own office. You can see how we're structured. And we have educators in all of those areas. Including nutrition education that we share with the same county. So, how did the next generation reorg begin? Well, in Governor Walker's 2015 budget, it included significant cuts to state funding to the UW system, including UW Extension. As being a division of the UW, we received the same cuts across all the other campuses. The biennial budget reduced the UW system budget by $250 million. Our portion for Cooperative Extension is $3.6 million per year. And that's 8.3% of our ongoing state funding. That's on top of previous state budget cuts that occurred in previous years. This one, however, is the one that's going to make drastic changes in the system. So what ended up happening is Chancellor Kathy Sandeen pulled together an executive sponsor team of our Dean of Cooperative Extension, the Vice Provost Ann Brower, and Steve Wildeck, who is an Associate Vice Chancellor for Finance, to say we need to look at doing things differently because this is a significant enough cut that we have to reform, we have to change structurally. We're not going to be able to absorb this cut with just retirements or leaving positions open and keeping them vacant. We need to work differently. So the term next generation, or the EXT, next generation reorganization, came about. And we are now in the process of that reorganizational plan. The cuts, the level of cuts as she's dividing them are $1.2 million from county level programming, $1.7 million from the campuses. So we have state specialists on all the campuses. And $700,000 from central administration. Where we are now is that she has created, through a process of developing work groups. So we have statewide, about 11 statewide work groups are formed, and they're on a variety of topics and areas around the reorg. I'm currently serving on the county and tribal reorganization work group. And we're meeting pretty intensely. We're meeting once a week. And each of those committees are going to recommend what they believe to be the appropriate response to meeting the goals of the project, which is to reduce our funding, to organize ourselves to reduce our funding. She had a town hall meeting today at UW Waukesha, and I was able to participate live stream and listen. And her three emphasis areas were, we're going to remain relevant, flexible, and digital. And she admitted that we're not doing so well in digital because there's a big portion of our state that is lacking access to broadband, and that's an area that definitely needs to be worked on. Her goal is to make sure that we work closely with our counties as we establish priority staffing needs within the parameters of our budget. That began with a survey. That particular work group is a statewide work group that put together a survey around county priority issues. And they made a decision to send it to all the members of the Extension Committee, the oversight committees of Extension in each county. In Kenosha County, that would be the Planning, Development, and Extension Education Committee. So So here, Supervisor Poole and Skolinski would have both received a link to that survey. They also made a decision to send it to the county executives or county administrators. So it was sent to county executives. So that's the representation from Kenosha County putting into the input for those. And I tell you what, I did make a one copy. I didn't have the copies for everybody, but I made a copy for you just to take a peek to see what the survey looked like. What I don't know, which I think will be really interesting, is if they will be able to sort that data by county. So one of the proposals on the table, or what we're anticipating, is that the geographic boundaries will change in terms of areas in which we'll work. Kenosha and Racine are targeted to be combined administratively. So it'd be interesting, at least from my perspective, to see the results of the survey from Kenosha and Racine so that we have a clearer picture. The statewide data is going to be nice, but honestly, I want to see Kenosha and Racine. So I'm hopeful they'll be able to sort it by now. We are the only two-county area in the state. There were four counties identified as single unit or urban counties: Milwaukee, Waukesha, Dane, and Brown. And there's us, Kenosha and Racine. And then everyone else across the state is reorganized in either 3, 4, or 5 county groupings. So at this point, as the work groups begin to work, she identified today that her hope is that the work groups will present to her in mid-2017 their recommendations. She hopes then to begin an implementation process after that, which in my mind means probably beginning with the next state budget cycle, which would be July 1. So when she says mid 2017, that's what.
Tuition increases are off the table
too. Right, and that's a great point. When we talk about tuition increases, that affects the big UW system, but we also are affected by that. Although we don't have tuition in our programs because we're county funded, right, as well as any program fees, but it does affect that tuition down. Mm-hmm. I will add that in effort to sort of get the process rolling in Kenosha and Racine, because it does feel like the process is taking very long time, we made created an opportunity for the two extension committees to come together. So August 29th, in 2 weeks, our PDEC committee is going to meet with the Racine County Extension Committee at the county building to have them start having the first conversations to just say, this is what we know, just about what we're telling you, but also digging into that survey a little, say, here are the priority areas. How do we see ourselves as a two-county unit that sort of identify those priorities would be? Because it will ultimately be those priorities that will determine staffing. So as you look at the staffing that we have today, that may or may not be where we go after all of this is done in 2017, because we want to staff our programs respective of the issues as they have been identified for Kenosha and Racine County. That would be our That's what I know today.
A long process. And I remember hearing about this almost a year ago that they were starting to look at this stuff, and so we're looking at almost another year before it's. At least we have an idea of now what's going on with the whole process.
Yes.
And they have any idea where, if they combine the two, where it will be housed out?
Her commitment is, that there will be a county extension office in each county. But that part won't change. What the merging together is more administratively, and if counties choose programs. Now, for those of you who know, if you look at our chart, we already share educators with Racine County today. Our agriculture educators, 50% in each county, and our nutrition education programs in each county. So we already have a relationship and partnership with Racine County now. If we move forward, we may or may not decide to share additional educators. One county may say our priority is X and we want to fund a position in that area, and that's unique to just Kenosha and or Racine. So that's an option. That would be an option. The administrative functions that I think we'll see more is where they're hoping to has some efficiencies. So instead of two department heads, perhaps there'd be one leader between two. But each extension office still maintains so that there's access to those resources in each county.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So help me understand this a little bit. I know for a while you were the like quad counties team leader. We really didn't have that much administrative overhead, quote unquote, to lose. Like, I don't, at least from what I recall. I mean, there wasn't much fat to be trimmed. I mean, there was kind of, I mean, you were busy doing a lot, and then there was sort of, you know, the folks in the office here in Kenosha County, and then there was receiving, like you said, correspondence back and forth, sharing, et cetera. I'm struggling, and maybe this isn't so much a question as it is a comment. You know, I get that you have to do this. I don't see this as being healthy, particularly for this Kenosha. Like, this does not sound like something that is designed to work. And that's not a criticism of your hard work, but in terms of how the state is viewing this, whether it's just their issue with system and then extension getting affected, you know, by some of that. Like, it's not healthy. It's not healthy. You know, it's just not. This is not something that is designed to actually work. Thank you.
Any questions from any other supervisors or who's in government at the table? Or?
Teddy, when you're talking about combining staff, like the 4-H, would you have one 4-H coordinator maybe for both counties? That would be a terribly tough job.
Exactly, and if I get any input into that decision, I would say that would not be wise by any stretch, because it's an incredibly large program and very, very time-intensive in terms of program oversight. So that's one of those where I think we have to, as committees look at this, we have to say it really makes more sense to maintain that educator one in each county. And that may be one that you don't ever consider trying to combine. Maybe 20 years from now.
Community development and natural resource. Amy, I mean, you know, Racine and Kenosha both need tremendous help. I mean, I couldn't possibly see one person doing both.
Right, and that's a position, thanks for mentioning that, Supervisor, because that's a position that Racine chose not to fund. They do not have that position today. So there you go, there's where it begins. Kenosha's investing in that particular area, Racine is not.
So that's an area we can't even look at combining because it's also a priority.
It would certainly mean, where's the money? Like, right? Wouldn't that be the question Kenosha would ask? Show me the money.
So in that aspect, there's no option on that one.
At least, I don't know what the negotiations, I think that's probably what's going to become more interesting, is how do you decide if there will be program sharing, which one, what will it be? Because right now they're talking, certainly administratively, but the option for program. We already do some sharing. Will there be additional sharing? That's yet to be determined. And if we do, what would that look like? We certainly want that. I can see today our shared positions are split 50-50. 50% of the salary and funding comes from Kenosha County and 50% comes from Racine County.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a legit question, I think. How has this affected your retention of employees? Not necessarily for Racine Kenosha offices, but like anecdotally, what have you heard throughout extension? I mean, I would imagine that folks jump in ship right and left.
That's exactly what's happened to Kenosha. I can speak to Kenosha. We have lost two people. And both of those men have said, I looked at the future and I don't know what, I have a family I'm responsible for. I need to make some decisions personally, and who doesn't understand that? And they've made decisions in the side of the men. That is very common across the state. Particularly agriculture seems to be, agriculture new development are the two that have been hit, probably I would say markets feeling that. Particularly people young to mid-career, because they are concerned. You have people who are probably waiting to see what happens, to see if perhaps a position in their county may not be available, but will there be an opportunity for me to move to another? So I can still stay in the system. People are doing that sort of waiting and see. But you're absolutely right. It has absolutely encouraged people to find employment elsewhere. And I will also be honest and tell you that it has drastically affected morale. It's a very, very difficult situation for colleagues to be in. And they find it very challenging because they want to start new programming, but they honestly don't know, where will I be in a year? How far do I dig into something knowing that I may not be the person to get to? It's very challenging.
And I would imagine too, with, you know, all of this pseudo quasi consolidation, that, you know, what a county decides to do, or a group of counties, for a year in terms of something that's a priority that they decide to fund may not be the same next year. Like, what happens 2017 may not be the same, 2018 may not be the same, 2019. So who would really invest themselves in that if that's the case?
That's a good point. Because if they make an investment in the area, I think hopefully they're doing it for a longer term. It's hiring someone to have expertise, if you will, in that particular area. To change that in a year would be incredibly challenging and problematic because you've made an appointment to have that.
So I don't know if you, I mean, I don't think that you mentioned it. I try to listen carefully. Sometimes I do miss things. To what extent has the work that you're doing with this whole restructuring been conversations with entities like workforce development? I know a couple weeks ago we had the whole Strive Together initiative and put all the community in one room. I mean, it would seem to me that those would be good places, I would think, to maybe help figure out what some of those priorities are very strongly so that there can be some continuity beyond just the year.
Absolutely. In fact, when we meet with the two committees on the 29th, one of the things we're going to share is some of that very data you're talking about. Here's what we already know in the communities. Strive Together in Kenosha, there's higher expectations and receipt, but at the same time, it's kind of data. There are certain things we know about our county health rankings, we know about poverty data. You're absolutely right. We'll look at all of that to say, does that help influence how we identify what the priority should be? And I think the hardest, it's hard for me, it's going to be incredibly hard for me, and as it will be, I think, for everyone involved, is when you look at that and you say, this is what we're doing today, what are we not going to do? Because obviously what we're doing, we believe to be a value and of importance. So we're going to be forced, I think, to make tough decisions about what are we willing to give up? No.
Mr. Chairman, the only thing that I can really think of, you know, UW Extension has been an asset to poor communities and districts that don't have a lot of money like mine, and to people of color. Like, the state is already unwelcoming to us. This is just going to make it worse. Thank you.
Mr. I don't support the Supervisor Hallman's statement on this community and this state is unwelcome, because I've lived here my entire life and I've lived with plenty of people of color and I've always welcomed them. So I reject his comment on that. Thank you, Mr.
Is there anything else from the committee? Other supervisors? Thank you very much.
Yes, to say the least. But it was a very
good. Was that adventure?
Yeah, it was like Parkside. Yeah.
Parkside.
It was a neat event. Yeah.
I'm glad they helped you feel good. See, you've already helped one person.
Yes.
I have to give that credit to my colleagues. That was just but it was always so confusing where we are. That's why I thought if I laid out where we were on the tree, it helped make sense. Extension is good.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Also, as this goes on, you can update us, you know, even by email, just so we know what's going to be going on over the next.
You can definitely do that. And you have three members of the PDEC committee on your legislative, so. Mm-hmm.
Mr. Cardamone, if you looked any happier tonight this evening.
Always a pleasure to be for the committee, Mr. Chairman.
Let's first go over where we are and what's been done so far.
Well, as the committee certainly remembers, at the beginning of the new term, I provided a series of what I viewed as primarily cleanup matters to Chapter 2 of the County Board Rules of Procedure. Some of it was strictly semantical, changing language, modernizing or otherwise harmonizing language. And then there were a few substantive changes which primarily reflected either changes in the law or changes in our practice that were no longer consistent with what the written rules were, again, in order to harmonize those. At the end of that process, there were a number of other suggestions for rule changes that have been made. I've been looking at those, working on those. The possibly most challenging that I'm still sort of wading through and speaking with colleagues and getting some opinions on deals with questions related to supervisor comments, so that is not before the committee tonight. However, there are two changes that were requested by members of this committee. The first one being requested by Supervisor Stolitsky, the second by Supervisor Decker. I did draft both of those because I think I was working off of the template from the first round that I had brought before the committee. They indicate that it's prepared by and submitted by me. While that's technically accurate, I probably should have had the requesting supervisor's names on as the authors or at least submitters. But in any event, so those two are before the board this evening. Or before, excuse me, before the committee.
Supervisor, you did the first one, I believe.
Yes, I did.
Do you want to talk about the reasons for?
Sure. I did a little, I worked with the finance department, Mr. Gertzen's staff, and they were able to create or provide a summary of the cost of, which I thought would be a little more substantial, of meetings that for each meeting. And obviously, the longer the meeting, the more expensive they are. I'm trying to find it because I just had it here. In general, each meeting as a minimum costs about $234, okay? Not a big expense. However, when we convene a meeting and there is no time-sensitive items, or we essentially say the pledge, approve minutes, and we adjourn, that's a waste of taxpayers' money. So what the intent of this amendment was simply this, and we've experienced it last meeting by the current chair, which I hadn't experienced in my four plus years already, was the fact that a meeting was canceled due to lack of agenda item content. So I wanted to get it in this since Mr. Carbone has taken the time to clean up an important document, but that needed some updating, if you would, that we have a clause in here that says if we don't have time-sensitive agenda items, or items that need to be acted on before the next scheduled meeting, which if you're normally is 2 weeks away, we would cancel the meeting with some, adequate notice to the public and supervisors, save that money for the taxpayers. So that is the intent behind the correction or the revised section that is applicable here. Any questions?
Yeah, I have a couple of concerns. I was looking at that last Friday, and the 30-minute requirement, I have a little bit of concern about, not largely because I don't see how the chair could know that in advance that a meeting is going to last 30 minutes, 45 minutes, 15 minutes, an hour. I'm not sure how that's possible. There are too many variables. For instance, you know, citizens' comments alone, you could have no citizen comments, you could have 10 people up there all speaking for 5 minutes, potentially. You could also have unexpected floor discussion or debate over an issue that maybe wasn't intended, right? these things could happen. Also, if I'm not mistaken, the chair, Chairwoman Rooney, mentioned that she wanted all committee reports done. So that's one issue. So I'm a little unclear, not really sure that making a definitive 30-minute requirement is a necessary thing. In fact, I actually went back a little bit, and there have been several times, it is true, where we have been excused for my time too, because I've only been on the board for 5 months, for less than a half an hour. But I went all the way back to January and looked at all of them. There were a few, no doubt, but I also averaged them all together going all the way back to January. And it was pretty much what I expected. It was about 55 minutes, yeah, to me. The other thing, too, is it just seems a bit arbitrary. To me, it's not the real issue. The real issue is, and I agree, it's the agenda items, how many there are, and their relative importance. I would agree with that. And really, the chair has that discretion anyway, as far as I can tell. And she has used it, ironically, the last couple of meetings, or two out of the three, I believe, were canceled anyway. So forcing her hand, requiring her to cancel a meeting over kind of an indeterminate criteria seems to be a bit problematic.
Can't argue with it. However, if there isn't a metric around it, as far as the time frame, I would agree. And I'll tell you this, with the exception of the last two out of three meetings, it's never happened in prior to this. So the point is not necessarily for the discretion that's being utilized right now with our current chair, future chairs. And in the past, it's never happened. And yes, I have been there, and it's been 10 minutes. And people are, and it's not for people that live right near the city. It's relatively easy, right? But it's the districts out west. You're driving twice, three times as long as one way than the meeting length. So although I do understand, and I think that the discretion is still there, that's why it was kind of, I wanted to leave it a little bit flexible, but also wanted to put it in here is that, you know what, it's something that a chair shouldn't be afraid to use. It hadn't been used, like I said, in my two previous terms. First time I'd experienced it was the last two. And I think that it is a prudent thing if you don't have, and to your point, worthwhile agenda, lengthy agenda items. And we normally know on our agenda, for instance, if you looked at tonight's meeting, okay, I would anticipate we're probably 45 to 55 minutes, depending upon if there's some debate on some of the items. But we almost always have a fairly good feel for agenda items that are going to garner public commentary or debate. Sometimes an outlier here or there happens, but by and large, I think if it's something that invokes the passions of some supervisors, that's anticipated. So that was the intent behind mine. I understand 30 minutes, 45 minutes, 10 minutes. It was a number that seemed about right because less than that, some supervisors are driving 30 minutes, okay? And if it's not, and we have had them where it was just a non-timely issue, such as an example, approval of last meeting's minutes, right? That's not a time-sensitive issue. But if it is something that does require action by the committee, I think that it can be acted upon, and the chair has discretion to do so.
Anyone else on the committee?
Oh, I need
to. Yeah, I'm going to have to say I can't support this, mainly because, I mean, like you said about the committee reports, the last two, we've had a lot of debate over one topic, whether it was anticipated or not. The other one is basically to the citizen remarks. I mean, there could be something I heard over the weekend that might have citizens coming in to talk to us. And that main one on that, that's my main point, is this whole citizens' comments, being able to come in and talk when they should have the right to. And at $234 a meeting, a couple lights and some flushes of the toilets is necessary enough to have the meetings for citizens to come in and whatnot. And I don't know if I can make a motion to reject.
Well, let's
keep on. Okay, sorry.
Well, let David. since I already let him say he could speak, so.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It has happened in the past with previous chairs. Certainly every chair has their own criteria for utilizing discretion in terms of how they address this. So I hear you, but it has happened many, many, many times in the past where various county board chairs have canceled meetings because there was not enough agenda items. So it's not unusual, particularly in summer. I will say I'm a little surprised. I know there was one of the things I worked on a number of years ago was the creation of a consent agenda for the sake of time, where we have those things that are not sensitive, that there was no fiscal implications for, that were not major, that we could group them all, vote, and move on. Like tonight, I'm sure there will be many cases where red, vote, red, and it'll just be sitting there longer and longer and longer and longer. I understand, like, you're doing this in good faith. It's just always much better just to have a conversation with the chair. Because like you said, the discretion is already there, so sometimes a little helpful urging for them to utilize that is wise. And I don't like the must provision in here. It seems a little hostile.
Do you have any
kind of that?
The other
opinions? I don't dislike meetings being canceled because it gives us more free time. And if it's a short meeting, granted, we'd had some short meetings. But if we're going to put a figure of $230-some for a meeting, then I say to myself, well, what about the cost? Yeah, that's a cost. Okay, what about the right of some of the citizens to come and speak on an issue that may have come up over a previous weekend? The Kemper Center was an example that sprung up, nobody expected, where people can get up and make their statements to the county board. I don't think to save $234 is worth to take that right away from the citizens to come and address the county board. But I do like the chairman have the ability to cancel a meeting if the chairman feels that there's really nothing going to happen. You know, I can see both sides of the issue.
I agree with Rick and Andy. I mean, it's up to the chair. If there's no items on the agenda that have to be dealt with, by all means, cancel the meeting. It doesn't make any sense to come in here for 7 minutes. But it's her decision. I mean, we get elected to do 2 meetings a month in a committee.
I think he's just saying it may be canceled. It doesn't say it has to be canceled.
It said it must.
It must.
It says it must.
That's it.
If I may, it's my opinion, and I think that Supervisor discussed this when he first raised the issue. It is my opinion that the chair certainly has that discretion really at any time. I did draft the rule amendment as requested. If the committee has concerns that there is any question about the chair's ability to cancel a meeting or discretion in being able to cancel a meeting, I did take the liberty to draft an alternate version that would clarify that the chair has that authority, and I'm certainly happy to share that if the committee wishes to. I just say that was I did take the initiative to prepare that as a possible alternative.
I'd like to hear.
essentially my motivation in putting this together was recognizing that, that the rule as written does say that the board shall meet the first and third Tuesday of every month. I could understand the possibility that someone could read that as a mandate, and so the language is indicating, clarifying and indicating that the chair does have the discretion to cancel a meeting really for any reason as long as proper notice is given. I don't know if anyone other than Supervisor Holman may have been on the board when previous vice chair, Fred Ekernes had his wife pass away the morning of a meeting, and I was rather surprised the board continued to hold the meeting that evening. Regardless, I would have seen, in my layperson's opinion, would have been an excellent reason to have not, you know, canceled the meeting that evening. But in any event, there have been times where, due to weather or concerns of weather, meetings have been canceled. It seemed to me that, that if there were concerns about ensuring that it was written in the rules that that discretion existed, in case there was any question, that this was perhaps a way to achieve that.
Well, frankly, I like the way this sounds a lot better, largely because the time constraint is eliminated. There's specific reasons given for canceling. Obviously, the most glaring one, obviously, is the lack of agenda items, inclement weather. But it also opens it up for other reasons given to the chair for discretion to cancel it. And it maintains the, like I said, the chair's discretion. I like the word.
Is there any, is there any requirement on adequate notice? Is there a definition? Is it 24 hours? Is it 2 hours? Is it, not to put, but I don't know if there's a requirement in statutes.
Yeah, my recollection is that as a general rule, and I apologize, and I should have looked at this, I don't know if this is statutory or if it's how it's been interpreted. Generally speaking, 24 hours is considered is sort of the standard. I believe 2 hours is when you start getting into emergency notice. I think there may even be provisions for less than that if it's absolutely necessary. But I think my recollection is that it's 2 hours is usually considered emergency notice. 24 is sort of standard notice.
Okay. I have no problem with this wording. It just was never really stated in there that. Even though maybe it was an unwritten rule, that canceling a meeting isn't some really negative or restrictive type of an activity if calls for it. I don't find it this. I'm looking at it from the standpoint of $234 doesn't seem to be, and isn't a lot of money, but it adds up over time, and nobody ever wants to stop spending anywhere in the county government. So there does come a time where if it isn't a worthwhile event, with the exception of the commentary from the supervisor regarding citizens' comments, which in my term on here have only been a couple times where something's ever substantially come out of nowhere, and maybe the Kemper Center was probably one of the first ones. Otherwise, it's been a anticipated commentary from the public that I've been around. I've got no problems with this, so if you want to substitute this version for mine, I'm okay with that.
You make that a motion, right?
Yeah, I'll make that motion.
I'm fine. Second.
Okay. Pick somebody.
So, you cancel the meeting? You cancel the meeting, the committee before it is canceled?
I'm sorry?
Well, we're meeting tonight. If they would cancel the meeting, your meeting would still be going on. Human Services meets on the first Tuesday of the month. Mm-hmm. They cancel the county board meeting like they did last week. We still meet. Yep. So, in clement weather and it affects committee meetings too, or?
Question of the chair.
It's not addressed in this rule. I think, again, it is my opinion that as long as things are properly noticed, that the chair of both the board and the committees have that discretion. This language specifically deals with the county board meetings in part because that was the
impetus for the original request.
Mr. Chairman, I wonder at what point do we just make this really onerous? Do we just list everything? I mean, we have an unwritten rule that, you know, we alternate city-county in terms of who's our county board chair. We have an unwritten rule that a person only serves one term. Do we want to write that down too? Like, how text-heavy do we want to make this? We actually don't have a petition for discharge in our rules. We used to. It would be nice to have that back. That did exist at one point in time, and there should be some version of that moving forward. But again, like, how text-heavy do we want to make this?
Is there any more commentary on the motion?
Well, I guess I'm sure with people driving and used to be a little Wisconsin, if some reason ever a bunch of like snow and they haven't, and it's really hard to drive when it's like that. So if something did happen like that, it makes sense if you knew something like that was going to happen to cancel a meeting.
If there's nothing else on the committee, there is a motion on the floor. All in favor of the new motion, state by saying aye.
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 Opposed? It passes. Then Supervisor Decker isn't here. But we want to read over the rule that she submitted.
And I hope that I did justice what her intent was. I unfortunately didn't get a chance, rushing trying to get this on the agenda for this week. I didn't get a chance to run past her before I submitted. She had indicated that she had concerns about items going, and I think the phrase that she used was directly from a committee to the board. And what she meant was a situation, for example, if that previous item was scheduled both here and on tonight's county board agenda, that the amended version would not be part of that packet, therefore people would not have the opportunity to review it prior to the board meeting. And the best way that I was able to try and incorporate that was as drafted, essentially saying that it could not be scheduled on the county board's agenda unless it had already been considered by the appropriate committee or committees, unless the chair in their discretion in consultation with the submitting individual determined that it was a time sensitive issue.
I'm sorry, Mr. Cromwell. Did you say amended? I'm confused. Can you explain that one more time?
Sure. It came up specifically in the discussion, the first discussion of the changes to the rules. As you recall, I brought in several changes to Chapter 2. They were on both this committee's agenda and the board agenda for the same evening, in part because I did deem them to be time sensitive, including issues related to the number of committees a person could serve on, et cetera. There were some changes made to my proposal in the committee that were passed. So those changes were not reflected in the proposal that was part of the packet that had gone to supervisors the week before. And she had expressed concerns about changes being made at committees that would not have the opportunity to be reviewed by supervisors prior to the board meeting where they were going to be asked to vote on it.
So I
and again, I can't speak for what her intent was. I can only try and
convey
what
her So there are two things in my head. One, I mean, I know there was a time where things were in committee and it would say, you know, in the packet, will be discussed, signature sheet will be done in committee, and we'd get up there and people will be like, well, we don't have the folks' signatures, even though the clerk would read the vote totals, who voted which way, in committee, which just seemed absurd to me because there are copy machines on every floor of this building and I could not understand why we could not seem to take care of that. This seems to lean somehow in that direction in some way. The other, as I had said before, there used to be a means where you could obtain a certain number of signatures by past committee and have something sent directly to the board. Standard operating legislative procedure in many governmental bodies across the United States and elsewhere in the world.
So this just seems really odd to me in some way.
Mr. Carbone, you mentioned, as an example, something comes to this committee, we vote on it, it goes up, and the Supervisor Allman's point, okay, you can read the votes. But that, if something is amended, I don't know how often it happens, it doesn't matter if it happens once or 100 times. It does happen. Nobody's had really any time to digest maybe what the change could have happened in committee. But yet, in the wording here, the item shall be scheduled for inclusion in the agenda regular meetings unless it's already been considered by the appropriate committee or committees. Well, it was considered by the appropriate committee or committees, but that doesn't mean the rest of the board has really had any time to kind of review. I don't know if it, you know, because it's only 2 weeks later, right? That unless it's one of those things, it's maybe a budgetary item or something like that. So maybe you can. I'm not trying to nitpick.
The intention of the language, and perhaps I didn't, perhaps I didn't capture it. What I meant was to try and convey it could not be placed on a county board agenda until it had actually gone through a committee.
Okay, and in that case, from here to there, unless it's already on it, it wouldn't be because
it
we had. Okay, fair enough. Yeah, that's good. I just wasn't
was
thinking through it clearly.
My
yeah.
interpretation of what you
make
it
chair.
Obviously not my place to say as staff. I don't know if there's any value in putting this matter over so that Supervisor Decker can speak more to her intent in requesting it. That's up to the committee, obviously.
If anyone wants to table it, can propose that. But Supervisor French,
the only thing that occurred to me, and I know what you were trying to say, and I don't know if that was her intent or I'm not interpreting this properly, but it wasn't that it wasn't, if something isn't considered by the committee, it's that people aren't in the committee, they don't have the time to consider it before it gets to the committee, right? Is that what you were saying?
Yeah,
that's how I kind of read that. I don't know if I'm misreading that.
No, I think Mr. Carmel kind of clarified for me in that
okay.
It wouldn't be on tonight's agenda because we hadn't taken any activity and it doesn't go from here onto the agenda because the agenda's already been published.
Okay.
So I'm okay with that. It would then,
yes.
The next meeting or next
so
board meeting, unless it's really,
it
I can't think of anything that would be that critical unless it's some type of a state of emergency, right?
Have we had, even in the human services, where they had time constraints on approving a grant or whatnot?
No, I remember that sometimes appointments, it would be a critical appointment or something that they would just bring it to the floor of the committee. You could waive the committee. You know, most of it's, you know, a happy feeling type of thing rather than anything. And as far as human services goes, I don't ever remember a grant for any monetary issue.
Well, wasn't there even the issue we talked about last month about
the drugs, the psychologist?
No. Approving the new. No, to get onto a new database.
Oh,
wasn't that under a time constraint? Because they had to get onto it by a certain time period. And I guess that's my concern is, I mean, as slim as it might be, are there going to be instances where we need to have immediate responses or an immediate vote to go up?
You bring up a point, but I'm thinking I would certainly hope staff could know about a new change
that's
2 weeks away. You know,
the board can change the rules and I'll shoot it. If it's necessary. I mean, if you want something to the board for, the board can bring it at the meeting, regardless of by a two-thirds vote. So if it's all that sensitive.
I think those are the exceptions that I do as opposed to rules, and this is speaking of what kind of rules is that in general, procedural-wise. The committee would have time to review, discuss, table it, not table it, amend it, whatever the case may be, and then it would be available to be put on the next meeting's agenda. I like that idea.
To pass the gavel in my perspective, to me this would have been something that would have been good 50 years ago, but not today. There's too much, we have too much accessibility to information, and if it's something that happens that evening, we can actually attend, like, finances meeting tonight, something that will be on the agenda. If we could attend that meeting to see what's going on, if they meet, say, on a Thursday, and it doesn't make it, we have access to information over the weekend and on Friday and Monday to get all the information we want on that particular topic. I mean, we receive emails, faxes, everything else, calling staff. We have that ability now more than ever to get instantaneous information. So to me, this, anything that delays it, it doesn't serve a purpose anymore, because we have the ability now as supervisors, which doesn't come by snail mail, it comes by email. And we have to get the information within 5 minutes if we want. So that's my perspective. Supervisor Allen?
So I've been around, I think, here a bit longer than I think many of you at this table, that are county supervisors. One of the first committees I sat on was this one, was legislative, and I got to know the rules very well. I can think of at least one occasion, maybe two, where I know I brought things forward that didn't necessarily fit the wording here. Where I'd written it up, had a signature sheet, left it at the clerk's, explained to people and said it's available, sign on. Because I knew committee chairs wouldn't take it up because they didn't understand it or for one reason or another. You know, it's a tool of doing this job just like anything else. This just strikes me as, I don't, and maybe you're right. Maybe you didn't quite capture the spirit of what she was aiming for. I can't support this as worded.
Would you want to make a motion to that?
I'll see what my colleague across the table has to say.
Just in response to what you were saying, Mr. Chair, with regards to continuous feedback or information, with the exception of a committee like this that occurs right before, but what it's simply saying is that until we've taken action on it, won't be on the agenda, which I actually like. I don't think that there's ever a case where we need to ever move that fast in government. We should have time to digest it, make sure that our positions or individuals' positions are clearly understood. But since the author is not here, I will make a motion to table this so that we can bring it back on, and perhaps the wording will get changed, or perhaps some clarifying statements can be brought forth.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. Any discussion on table? Okay. Now there's a motion on the floor of the table. Are you the governments? Have you vote?
Aye.
All in favor of the table, say by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? It'll be tabled till next month then.
Point of clarification. Does Supervisor Decker have the right to work with Mr. Carbone if the wording isn't right between being on the table and bringing it?
Okay.
I think that'd be best.
This is tabled, however, okay. if Supervisor Decker changes the wording and all that, does anyone have the committee have any issues there if it comes back in a different form?
She has every right to do that.
Okay.
Frankly, I don't have a problem with the wording per se, but I tend to agree, since maybe Supervisor Becker's not here, it might be good to see if she meant something else. But I think, I suppose it's worth asking her anyway to consider it. But I don't really have a problem with the wording as it sense. But if there was another implication somewhere about other people not in the committee and the length of time committee meeting prior to the county board meeting, if there's something implied or unstated there, it might be good for her to say it, and if not, then we can suppose bring it back and then
vote on it and cast it.
Okay. Anything else to come before the committee this evening? I misstated something earlier, Mr. Cardinal, correctly, we actually do have to meet in October because we have to deal with the budget of his office. So what I'm going to do is just make that one budget meeting, and since it's relatively easy, we'll make the time closer to the county board meeting, if that's okay with everyone on the board. That's what we're only dealing with this budget.
I'm sorry.
We're only going to deal with his budgetary issues in the October meeting.
Okay, that's fine.
And I'll move up the time a little bit closer to the county board meeting to give everyone, so they don't have to be here for that time. Anything else before the committee? Is there a motion to adjourn?
Do we need to approve minutes? Or no?
Sorry.
We did? Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Motion to approve, or adjourn, I guess.
Second? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? We got it in half an hour. And who was financed because we were 3 minutes late?
Give it over. Hey, boy. Yeah.